We were looking at verses 13 and 14. We didn't quite get that finished last week. Matthew 15, verses 13 and 14. This is right after Jesus had been talking about how the Pharisees were honoring God with their lips, but their hearts were far from them. And this, of course, was a recurring theme in Jesus' conversation with the Pharisees. We'll also see that in this morning's lesson. Let's go back and read those two verses in Matthew 15. After his disciples had said that the Pharisees were offended by what he said, he comes back and says, "Every plant which my heavenly Father has not planted will be uprooted." Certainly talking about the Pharisees. "Let them alone. They are blind leaders of the blind, and if the blind leads the blind, both will fall into a ditch." Now, there are certain things that those verses teach and certain things those verses don't teach. It certainly teaches that any type, and we're talking about here any teaching that doesn't have as its source God and His Word, will be uprooted. So God is going to pull up, just like a weed, something that is not in accordance with His will, His Word. And of course there is, just like in the first century, there were so many false religions and false teachings and false philosophies that weren't according to God, weren't according to His Word. And it's the same thing today, and I'm sure it'll be until Christ comes again. There's always going to be that. Always going to be those false teachings and philosophies and beliefs. You know, the Bible is so, especially the New Testament, I mean, it is so filled with teachings about things that aren't in accordance with God. False teachings and false beliefs. It's amazing that so many people today don't want that discussed. Jesus thought it was incredibly important because, I mean, throughout His life, He constantly talked about that. Sermon on the Mount, He mentioned it repeatedly. In discussions with multitudes, in discussions with individuals, in discussions with His apostles, constantly talked about. The apostles, throughout their life and what we have recorded of them, met this head on. And in the other writings in the New Testament, I mean, we see that over and over again. In our Sunday night lessons on the book of Revelation, the letters written to various churches, all of those letters, whether it was to Laodicea or tonight's is Thyatira or Smyrna, all of those little letters talk about false teaching. So it's a very, very common New Testament subject that probably needs to be addressed far more than it is because it's so important. And I think that's a great lesson from these two little verses here, two or three verses. I think that's a wonderful lesson. As long as we're, you know, we have the right motive and we're teaching the truth, and I don't mean something that's not the truth, but something the truth that is the truth, the gospel, God's word, there will be people offended. I mean, if they were offended at Jesus, they're going to be offended at us because He was the perfect teacher. He never made any mistakes in any way. He always said it in the perfect way, at the perfect time, and look at all the people that were offended at what He said. And He never did anything wrong. So it would be very surprising if people weren't offended at us when we were teaching and preaching the gospel. But that's the way it's always been. That's not going to change. There's nothing going to be, you know, people's nature is not going to change, so they're going to be offended. And just like Jesus, He didn't wake up that morning, okay, how many people can I offend? That's not what He was doing. But He knew He had to teach the truth, and this is one of the truths that had to be presented. And so He says, "Let them alone." Well, Jesus didn't leave them alone in the sense of He kept right on teaching the truth. So that's why I wanted to bring this up. He's not talking about in any way that we're to stop teaching the truth, because he didn't. So that's not what he's teaching at all. The point he's making is what he finishes there. These are blind leaders of the blind, and that's what they're doing, right? And that's what they're doing. People who teach things that are false are going to have people who follow them. And again, that's the nature of humanity, and they've done that since the days of Adam and Eve, and they're going to do that until Jesus comes again. But we still have the responsibility of teaching the truth. Just like Jesus taught the truth, you and I have to teach the truth. Most people will not accept it. You know, Jesus made that so clear in his teachings. He knew most people weren't going to accept him. He told his followers the same thing. He says, you go to a town and you take this message to them. And if they don't accept it, they don't like it, they're offended, you shake the dust off your feet, you go somewhere else. He knew that was going to happen to his disciples, so he warned them ahead of time. Don't expect massive numbers of people to accept what you're going to say. And people, just like with Jesus, they're offended that they have to submit to him and follow what he says, and they can't make up their own religion. Okay, because I think we talked last week about how many people would have followed Jesus if they could have followed him in the way they wanted to follow him. He would have had massive, massive numbers of disciples if he would have told them, okay, you can follow me any old way you want, as long as you say you believe that I'm the Son, that's it, and you know, you can go on and do anything you want. But that's not what he told them. You know, even when people, and we haven't got to that part in the gospel yet, but you know, some people, they made excuses about various things. Well, I need to go do this first, and I need to go do that first. He did not say, that's okay. He did not come back and say that. Now, he could have got a lot more people to follow him if he had said, okay, you can do this first, and it's okay for you to do that. But he didn't do that. I mean, you never saw Jesus going, when people rejected him, going and trying to soften the message so that they would come back. He never did that one time. Not one single time. And if we're, you know, when we study these four accounts of the gospel, the purpose is to become more like Christ. So that's what we need to do. We need to be more like Christ in every area and everything we say, do, think, places we go, everything. And that's how he did it. He presented the truth, and then people had to make a choice. They had to make a decision. Am I going to accept that, or am I not? And that was it. That was the end of the story. And then he went on. He knew he only had, you know, a little over 3 years to do all of this. You know, train the apostles and do all of these things. He knew his time was limited. Well, so was my time is very limited. I mean, I'm getting ready, as my kids and I were talking this morning on the way to church, I'm getting ready to turn 50 in about 2 months. Well, actually, yeah, 2.5, whatever. So, I mean, if you look at the statistics for how long men live, you know, 20-some years would be average. So I know that my time is limited. Jesus knew he had 3 years or a little over. Statistics say I may have 20-some years left. Well, then I need to get busy. There's a lot of people I need to talk to. And I can't spend all my time on one individual, just like Jesus didn't. He took advantage of every opportunity. That's what we're seeing in the Gospels. Every opportunity. And he presented people with the truth about who he was and his mission and what he came to do. And then they had to make a decision. And then whatever they decided, then that was it. And then he went on somewhere else. And so all of us have a very limited time. Even if we're, you know, 20 years old, we have limited time. We're not going to be around forever to talk to people. So if we're going to be like Jesus, we need to use our time well and wisely and realize what's important and, you know, live the truth and speak the truth. Not just enough, live the truth. That's what the devil wants us to do, is never say anything to anybody. We have to live it or our message won't mean anything, but we have to have a message. And we see that in Jesus' life. He took those opportunities just like here. People didn't want to hear what he had to say, but he still had to say it. And so he said it, and he moves on. And that's what we see him doing. This is basically the end of that first retirement, that first withdrawal. He went to Capernaum, a very kind of northern part of Palestine, and we're in that last year. He has less than a year left of his life at this point. A little over, I think it's just a little over 11 months is all he has to left to live. It's a little over 11 months. And when you look at how he spends that last 11 months, it really makes you think about what's important. And that's something we're going to be focusing on. Most of what we have left in the Gospels, especially John, is that last 11 months. And in John's account of the Gospel, it's mainly the last 2 weeks of his life. So there's a lot left, but there's just 11 months. And he's going to die. So there's a lot he has to accomplish, a lot he has to do. And you really see him look at what's important. You really notice what he believes is important in his life during the last 11 months. And so he spent this first withdrawal. He's went there to Capernaum. We don't have a lot of information about that period of time. And so now that ends that first retirement, that first withdrawal. Now he goes to an entirely different part. He goes all the way over to the Mediterranean Sea now, to the cities of Tyre and Sidon, which was in Phoenicia, right there on the coast. And this is like the second retirement, the second period where he withdraws with his apostles. There's still quite a multitude following him. He's still pretty popular. But, I mean, the opposition is really going to intensify. Every month it's going to get harsher. More of the religious leaders are going to get involved. Even religious leaders that don't like each other, because they both don't like Jesus, they're going to get together against him. And we're going to start seeing that as early as this second retirement. So, Matthew 15, go down to verse 21. It says, "Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon." Okay, this still is on the coast in the area of Phoenicia, quite a ways from where he's been. So this journey took a while to get there. "And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed.'" This is the only incident we have recorded during this whole time, is his conversation with this woman from Canaan. This Syrophoenician woman, I think, is how one of the other accounts describes her. This is a Gentile woman. Okay, it's a Gentile region. It's not a Jewish region at all. There wouldn't hardly be any Jews for any reason in these cities, in this area. So he's not talking to a Jewish woman. She's not Jewish in any sense, and she has no affiliation with the Jewish religion. But what's the first thing she says to him?
Lord, Son of David.
And again, she has no affiliation. She's not in a Jewish area, nothing. And yet she acknowledges the fact that he's the Son of David. Somewhere, she had learned or heard something about Jesus. Maybe she'd been in some town traveling, or we have no idea. It doesn't give us any indication. But somewhere she had learned enough about Jesus to have faith in him. So for I think there's a lesson here is that for some people, you know, if they have the right heart and the right attitude, the right mind, it doesn't take a lot. A lot of teaching, or they didn't have to have, there's no indication she saw any miracles done whatsoever. And yet she had more faith than a lot of the people that had been with Jesus and saw tons of miracles. And so it all goes back to the condition of a person's heart. You know, the soil. The Pharisees had horrible soil. Sadducees, scribes, terrible soil. Most of the really religious people had terrible soil. Their heart was awful. But here we have a Gentile woman, and this seems to be the first indication that Jesus had much to do with the Gentile. This Gentile woman had faith, and so she acknowledges that fact. So here she is a long, long ways from Jerusalem. And this is a long ways from Jerusalem. And she cries out, "Have mercy on me." She, again, knew that Jesus was special and that Jesus could bless her daughter in some sense. She had that much faith that Jesus was somebody very special. And so she acknowledges him as Lord. Here we have, you know, she's submitting to him as someone greater than her. He's the son of David. And she says, "My daughter is severely demon-possessed." Like to know where she got her information. Yes, Don.
Matthew's account gives her as a Canaanite. And mm-hmm. Studies Jewish history, Canaanites and Israel were enemies with
the Jews. No, absolutely. So there would be no sort of mutual fellowship or friendship with these people at all. So it's interesting. It would be interesting to know where she, you know, heard about Jesus and why she had the faith she had. But it's one of those things we know nothing about it at all. Just that she had faith. And she had faith to the extent that she knew he could do something about her daughter. So he answered her, not a single word. No reply whatsoever. He's teaching a lesson. You know, sometimes as a teacher, the best way to teach a lesson is do what, CL? Not say anything, right? No response whatsoever. Yes, CL.
They probably hadn't heard any of his teaching.
Yeah, very, very little. She couldn't have had much information, much knowledge about him. But the amount she had convinced her that he was Lord, Son of David, and was able to help. And so she said, you know, "Have mercy on me." And so he just gives her a big, long speech. No, doesn't say a word to her. But he sure is teaching a lesson. But he's also teaching a lesson to the people around him. Of course, that's what's important. So he answered her not a word, and his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she cries out after us." They were annoyed. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what he's doing here. His disciples, first of all, are annoyed. And they're just telling him, well, just, you know, get rid of her. Send her away. She's bothering us and she's doing all this. They didn't like the fact that he didn't say anything to her. So they were trying to prompt him and get him to do something. So his response is, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Well, that's his first response. He didn't say what he was going to do or anything. He just says, "I was sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And then she stopped and went away. No, that's not how the story goes. Then she came and worshipped him. Here we have an account of a Gentile, again, that had to have limited knowledge, worshiping him. She said, "Lord, help me." It's all about her heart and her attitude. Lord, help me. But he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. Little dogs there is kind of what we would call puppies today. It's not a harsh word at all. So he said, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. You know, he keeps saying things to her that you think would send her away. She'd just give up and go on and say, okay, he's not going to help me. But he's really showing her faith here. Some people, after he, didn't answer at all, some people would have left after that and said, okay, he's not going to talk to me, I'm going to leave. Then the second one, he says, I wasn't sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. She knew what he was talking about as far as, well, that meant not me because I wasn't part of the house of Israel. Some people, when they'd have heard that, would have left. Not her. She's got enough faith to stay around, hang on, so she keeps coming back. And he says, you know, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. Well, that's the third response now that would have driven some people away. They would have given up. Not her. She comes back and says, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table. I really think you see her humility, you know, her submission to him, the fact that she, at some level anyway, knows that he is the Son of David, that he is the Lord, that he has this power. So she's not giving up. She's not giving up. So regardless of what he says, she just keeps coming back. And then, of course, Jesus finally says, O woman, great is your faith. You know, you don't see Jesus acknowledging somebody's faith very much in the New Testament in a positive sense. You know, he talked to his disciples several times and told them they had little faith on several occasions. But there's not a lot of recorded instances where Jesus tells an individual, you know, you have great faith. Yes.
One thing I get from that is that persistence.
Oh, absolutely.
Like a modern-day Christian should be, yep. But we see him every day.
Yeah. Persistent. Yep. Yes. Yeah. 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 Just a real small account. We only have a few responses from them, but every one of those is teaching multiple lessons to different people at different stages. Everything. So his response is, you know, you have tremendous faith. And I think we learn, again, as I mentioned, that you don't have to have experienced miracles or any of those type of things to have had great faith in that first century with Jesus. You just didn't. You didn't have to experience those things. Because so many people that experienced those things didn't have great faith. The apostles didn't have great faith for a long time. And they experienced more than anybody. And on more than one occasion, he told those apostles, those 12 apostles, that you have little faith. Your faith is tiny. And they should have had gigantic amounts of faith, and they didn't. I think it's a tremendous lesson for everybody.
Faith was more important than the matter of the law.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably a good place to stop. We're getting ready. That's all we have about that one retirement. That was all. The whole thing was just that one account. And so I'm sure he did other things while he was in Tyre and Sidon there in Phoenicia. But now he leaves there and makes a big journey all the way over to the southeast part of the Sea of Galilee. Now he does some things on the way. So next Sunday morning, Lord willing, we will start the third retirement, the third withdrawal with his disciples.